tuned for a live broadcast on heritageradionetwork.com. Live broadcast on heritageradionetwork.com. Stay tuned for a live broadcast on heritageradionetwork.com. For a live broadcast on heritageradionetwork.com. Stay tuned 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 for a live broadcast on heritageradionetwork.com. Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.com.
So welcome to our 101st episode of Unfiltered.
Woo-hoo! Still reeling from last week.
Oh my God. I think we had 10 pizzas, but it's your host, Brian DeMarco, with the always lovely and talented Aaron Fitzpatrick.
Hello.
So I can't believe we made it to, let's just reset. We'll call this our first episode of.
Sure. Yeah.
So we're at episode one again here.
Rewind.
We actually have some good guests in the studio today, but I do want to start out with, giving you your news segment. So what do we got?
Not just two little snippets today. One was, coming from New Zealand's news that there's a shortage for 2012 in the crop. And I remember we talked a bit about this with a previous guest, Eric Arnold, who was at the time with Bottlenotes and now I believe is at Lot 18.
Eric is the creative director and force at Lot 18 and a good friend of this show and myself. But yeah, I think it's really weird that they had what once was a glut and an overcapacity and forcing down the prices of Sauvignon Blanc worldwide. And pretty much hurting the Kiwi brand as far as it became, synonymous with Sauvignon Blanc and sort of their flagship varietal. Mm-hmm. Now we find an oversupply. Yeah. Now we have an undersupply.
Right, undersupply. They said about 30% lower compared to 2011 will be the 2012 harvest. So that's certainly a dramatic.
How do you think that will affect the pricing, or do you think it'll just a reset?
I would say probably a reset. I don't think it could affect the pricing that drastically. Very fast.
Because there's enough 2010 Sauvignon Blanc to choke a horse still, I think.
So, yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
And then something else I came across today was the brand manager, Romain Bruneau, who I believe is based in the UK, for Moët. Was jailed and fined. I saw this.
Yeah.
I was just like, come on. So jailed and fined for stealing 75,000 pounds of champagne and spirits left over from events that Moët hosted and sort of stashed in a warehouse. So he got 15 months in prison and fined 25,000 pounds for the missing stock.
Sounds like a thirsty fellow.
I guess so. He must have had a grand plan for that. But
well, it's funny that, I mean, usually at these events, and as you know, Aaron, you and I have done, I've done thousands of events, and I've hosted another, you know, a couple hundred here in the city. And the hanger-oners, the people in the wine business that come to your events, they're always at the end of the show. They come by your table and they're just, you know,
black teeth.
And the people that are scantily in the wine business, and they're the ones that are always trying to hoard bottles from you. Like,
right.
Do you have anything left over? That, you know, that Montmorency was amazing. Like,
yeah.
Dude, that was gone a long time ago. Like,
sure.
Here's some leftover swag from New Zealand. No, I'm kidding.
Here's a 2007 rosé. Yeah.
Right, exactly. But no, these are the people that walk out of the show with like four or five bags. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's like old men and then like half drunk chicks from Jersey. I'm dead serious. It's the women with the big purses that show up at your show and they walk out with like, you know, bags like cling, 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 cling. And like if they would go through customs in an airport, they would totally get stopped. But here they are walking out of our wine show with like four bags of, you know, four bottles of half drank wine.
So this guy over a 4-year period appropriated 400 bottles of Krug and 400 bottles of Belvedere vodka, supposedly, which was left over from events. So
and did he, was he caught reselling it or he just hoarded it?
No, hoarding it. Yeah.
Oh, yep. Okay.
I'm sure he had a plan, but anyway.
Yeah, he was going to try to get three vintages or four vintages going and then
Jesus.
Call it a vertical.
Right. So that's all I got for today. Well,
that's
amazing.
Yeah. Did you read Jancis this weekend?
No, I didn't actually.
Nor did I. Usually you're a pretty good Jancis.
I am usually right up in the FT Life and Arts section, yeah. But not this weekend, no.
And that paper is distributed on the North Fork of Long Island?
Yes, it is. You can find the FT Weekend available at Fork and Anchor. We usually have two copies in the off season because I think we're the only ones reading it. But come high season, we get about five copies and those move. So
nice. It's good to hear that the traveling roadshow makes it out that far.
Exactly.
Without further ado, would you like to introduce our esteemed guest today?
Yes. We are very fortunate to have Robert Bauer in town from Portugal. And I know that Katarina Jack, who is joining him today from Cobrand.
His handler.
Yeah. Says he only comes to town about two or three times a year. So I was like, wow, we get you for an afternoon and you're only here twice a year. So Robert is an 8th generation port producer who's living in Porto. So I will let you carry it away, Robert, with a little bit more of a description of what you do.
Well, good afternoon. Yes, I'm going to be... yeah, so I live in Portugal. I sound English. The only reason for that is all port wine children are very difficult at a young age. So it's the norm for all your parents to export you in a barrel to English schools. And we're lucky to return after 30 years. So I've just returned to Portugal.
Oh, really? So you were born?
I was born in Portugal.
You were born. Okay. You weren't hatched out of a barrel.
I was not hatched out of a barrel. That would be a good idea. but no, I was born in Portugal, raised there until age 8, and then shipped off to England.
Mm-hmm.
Did a little stint in New York for 5 years, and then came back.
So this makes you well suited to come back as a traveling conqueror, and you come back to your homeland, and they see you as what, an interloper or one of them?
They feel really worried about the wines in their cellar.
Why so?
Well, because with all port shippers, we love great wine from around the world, and all port shippers do enjoy wine from all around the world, and not just great vintage port.
Right.
So when there's another one join the crowd, as it were. It just means consumption just in
right.
places.
It goes up precipitously to, you know, so there's like, oh, God, it's like making room for another, you know, more food on the table, right? So
yes,
it's like,
exactly.
Yeah, so what have you brought us today? And we'll let Katarina sneak in here because as your handler, she probably has some insight into
our manager.
Yeah, handler. Why he's here and what you're hoping to accomplish besides being berated by us.
Well, I think that the U.S. doesn't have much of a port culture in general. So I think Robert offers such a wealth of information of the whole entire history and that whole port world. And I just think it's fascinating. A lot of people just don't know about it. So I thought Robert had so much to offer.
I mean, when you say that, I don't think there's a lack of awareness. There's two things. There's top of mind awareness. And then there's usage. And I think that the key is that people are well aware of port. And even the most novice of drinkers is completely aware of a Ruby or a Tawny, or even just they understand port. They may not get it completely, but the consumption is the issue. So talk to me about that, where you feel like where champagne sometimes gets pigeoned as being a holiday or a celebratory spirit or drink. Is port similar to that?
It's very much a seasonal drink versus celebration. So this is very much something that people feel that they have to have, you know, in the cooler months. Mm-hmm. And that's, I would say, the limiting factor for port wine, because, you know, we certainly drink it all year round, and it's 110 degrees, mm-hmm. you know, Fahrenheit in our vineyards. Mm-hmm. So that's the limiting factor. There is a problem with knowledge, though.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to many consumer events, and when it comes to port wine, they don't know that there's a difference between fruity ports and nutty ports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they right. didn't know there were some completely different categories. It's like people saying, well, I've heard of wine, but didn't know there was a red wine. Mm-hmm. If a port wine, there are two completely different tastes. There's ruby, which is fruity, tawny, right. which is nutty. And we need to get past that.
When you were talking about, you know, colors, there's also white port.
Well, you know, it's we get with the basics first, and then we'll talk about white port. Yes. White port has been, we created our dry white port in 1934, and we've been exporting it to the United States for, several decades.
But it's really not caught on until just quite recently.
It's very much because you have a three-tier system here. I have to go through three tiers of education before I can actually get to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
I think in Europe, where I can go direct to the consumer, I can have a little bit more success.
Mm-hmm.
So what we find going through the three-tier system is your traditional ports do better. The white port really gets taken on by that sort of, you know, that port ambassador that you find.
Right, it's esoteric.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's novelty. So that's not what you're necessarily going to reach for.
So Aaron, before he answers, what do you think, as a percentage of sales, white port would be in comparison to all of port? Just take a guess. I'm sure it's below 10%. But
oh, yes, for sure. Yeah. I was going to say like 2%.
What do you think? What, sir?
It's 0.5%.
Yeah.
It's very, very small indeed.
And when you tell me that it's been imported since the 30s, I find that to be almost, incomprehensible, because I've only even been aware of it. And I'm in the business for maybe 10 years I've been aware of it. And I've been to Portugal where they were pushing white port as an aperitif and basically trying to turn into the Martini Bianco, mm-hmm. of Portugal. And so I thought it was very fascinating that was their flagship in terms of like, the new generation, how to introduce an old product, according to you, from the 30s, and make it something relevant to the new generation of drinkers. So it's really interesting to me.
They very much changed the way you consume white port, where white port was always done chilled, served straight with maybe some roast almonds at home. The new generation are now sort of mixing it with on the rocks some tonic water and a twist of mint.
Mm-hmm. Delicious.
So you change a day part to be an aperitif.
It's very much an aperitif, you know, something to do during the day. Most white ports as well from Portugal are going to be sweet, you know, so ours is different, not necessarily right or wrong, but we go for the dry because we believe that if you take more of the sugar out of the wine, it's going to have more of a cleansing effect and sort of take away your thirst a little bit quicker and prepare you for all the great wines you're going to have during the meal.
Well, tell us a little bit about the major house you represent and sort of the wines that are sitting on the table and how they are more similar than different?
Yeah, well, the houses that I represent is Taylor Fladgate. That's where my family is from, because I'm a Yateman from Taylor Fladgate in Yateman. We merged with the Fonseca family in 1934.
Via marriage?
No. Dick Yateman's best friend was Frank Guimarães, and after the First World War, you had a collapse of the economies in Portugal. So he didn't want to see his best friend go under, so he sort of merged the two families together. And the Fonseca family have always been, or the Guimarães family have always been, part of our winemaking process. So mm-hmm. David Guimarães is our winemaker. Mm-hmm. There's no rule or rhyme to it. It's just the oddity. It's always happened that way. We've always had a Guimarães in the vineyard. And without the Guimarães family, I think we wouldn't be making these great wines today. He's made a lot of great, great wines.
So there's still some crazy tradition involved here.
A lot of crazy tradition, you know, but we have revolutionized. What the trick is that we haven't thrown, we've looked at our business, broken our business down, our winemaking, and said, where can we improve everything? 5-10%. Mm-hmm. So we've improved how we pick our grapes. We don't use big baskets anymore. We mm-hmm. use small baskets. Mm-hmm. We use triage. We've completely changed the way we are winemaking. We use the human foot is the best method of making port wine for vintage port. So we've got a machine that copies the human foot. Mm-hmm. So we get 60%.
Because unemployment isn't really a factor in Spain or Portugal right now, so you couldn't find humans to do it.
Well, yeah. Well, at the time, we thought, you know, things would be just booming and booming forever. You know, we believed the story.
Mm-hmm. And the great Euro hope. They built the bridge to nowhere and over the Douro Valley, and now there's like 10 cars on it a day or something. It's like
Portugal's definitely going through some hardship, and the Douro certainly is seeing effect. And that's why it's more important that we, as port wine shippers, are involved in the Douro Valley to make sure that this great wine region survives for another 320 years.
Mm-hmm. So before we kind of break down the wines that you have on the table, I think that what we see most, or consumers see most, on menus here in the States is either a ruby port, a tawny port, or a vintage port. And I know that there's, you know, LBV and Colheita, and, you know, maybe we don't necessarily have to get into that so much, but I'd love to break down the differences between those three, which are most popular.
Well, there's ruby and tawny, but just ruby and tawny I relegate, you know, more to the kitchen. Mm-hmm. You know, then there's the quality end, which you see in restaurants, or you should see in restaurants, which is two rubies, two tawnies. And this is the confusing. They're both rubies and tawnies, but they're called something else. There's the reserve, which Bin 27 would be an example, and that'll mm-hmm. be your young and intense mm-hmm. fruit-driven port. Your late bottle vintage is a wine that's bottled later than a vintage, 6 years old, so it's older than a reserve, so more complex. So you drink a late bottle vintage for complexity, you drink a reserve for intensity mm-hmm. of fruit. And then in the aged tawnies, it's the dried fruit. Mm-hmm. You know, 10-year-old, you have, you know, your dried figs, your dried apricots, great with an mm-hmm. apple pie and a pear tart. Then your 20-year-olds, your 30s and 40s get even nuttier. So I hope my father's not hearing this, but aged tawnies are just like my father. The older he gets, the nutty becomes. A little bit more concentrated as well.
But so you love them just the same. I love a nutty port.
The will has already been executed, yeah?
Sorry?
The will has already been executed, so you're safe.
I'm more worried about his cellar.
Perfect.
I better start drinking.
So, Katarina, help me out here for a second. And when you take what he's just told us, which is very informative, mm-hmm. and break down the customer for those types of wines that you perceive, who is your customer for those wines?
Well, it's funny. I think, like, the millennial generation, whenever I do talk about port to start, they're like, oh, yeah, port. It's something that my grandmother, I think, used to drink every once in a while. So I almost feel, ruby versus tawny, you kind of have to just talk about the category to begin with and just have them taste everything, you know, first of all. But I would say for Bin 27, a Ruby Reserve. You know, it's very good price point. I think it's like $18 a bottle.
So it's accessible.
Very mm-hmm. accessible. I think it's actually very widely available around the country as well. It's the number one port, correct, in restaurants?
It's actually the number two in restaurants. The number one is actually the Taylor Fladgate 20-year-old. Which
we'll get to
a little bit more expensive, yet it's the more expensive one that's actually is the most popular in the restaurants in the United States.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so Bin 27, it's your starter port, I think. You know, someone that's maybe just starting to figure out wine and the microbrews mm-hmm. To get there. And it has a rockin' label, too. I think it's kind of piratey with the black and white stripes and very hipster,
all right.
I think.
Wow, sounds like a Captain Morgan brief.
And it has nothing to do with the fact that it goes well with chocolate.
Goes very well with chocolate. And by the way, we have some Jacques Torres Bin 27 bonbons yeah. to try.
I saw that box.
Conveniently yeah. located next to me.
Yeah.
Mm, well, I think Katharina likes chocolate as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're going to take a short break and come back to taste on air. And we also have something that we're doing, a port cocktail called the Pink Diamond. So stay tuned and we'll tell you what that's all about.
Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market. Whether you are cooking for one or for a crowd, Fairway Market literally has everything you need for a fantastic meal. But if you don't feel like cooking, no worries, they cater. Check out fairwaymarket.com for more information, and be sure to check the new blog, On Our Plate, for weekly specials, health tips, and recipes.
Welcome back to Unfiltered, HeritageRadioNetwork.com, 4 p.m. Tuesdays, every Tuesday, and that song was a dedication to little Viv, Brian's daughter, who turns one today.
Shout out to Viv. So,
yeah.
And your iTunes archive, my dear daughter, in 10 years, will know that you were thought of and well regarded.
Yes. So, cheers to Viv.
Cheers to Viv.
Yeah.
Little porto to Viv here. Anyway, so we were having a very interesting discussion, Miss Erin, weren't we?
Oh yes.
About port and that not only who the customer is, but I guess I wanted, before we taste, well, actually we should start with these cocktails and get them in everyone's hands. But I do have a question about vintage port, because I've collected vintage port. And I know there's a strong following for certain vintages. And my birth year happens to be a very strong vintage for port.
And a lot of other wine.
And a lot of other wine.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, you know, you're going to try to guess, but hopefully you miss it by a decade and say I'm younger. But but the idea of vintage port to me, it connotes, you know, library feel and jacket and tie and an occasion where I still want to get back to this. I'm almost doing your job here, my dear, and helping you discover your day part for the younger Tawnies and Rubies. And let me ask you, I think there's a misconception out there that, you know, when you open a bottle of port, you have to drink it sort of immediately. So part of the preclusion, or the reason that people are not necessarily buying port, is like, oh, I can't drink all that in one vintage. I think a lot of people don't realize there's enough residual sugar.
You mean one night?
Oh, yeah, one vintage. Yeah, I can drink the whole vintage myself.
Yeah.
No, but in one night, in one sitting. So help you know, our listener understand the shelf life of port, not only as it's opened or how long it'll sit in the fridge, and even if it sits on the counter with a cork in it.
Yeah, no, port wine is actually, it will last quite...
It's fortified.
It's fortified, but you've got to remember, vintage is the only product you have to be careful with, because vintage is bottle-aged, so when you pull that cork, all the flavors in there are ready to react with oxygen, just like a normal table wine. It has an advantage when young, because these wines have a little bit more tannins than normal table wine. You probably have a week, you know, to keep okay. that open. But if, you know, it takes you more than a week to drink a bottle of vintage port, you have other issues.
Well, yeah, you don't have any friends.
True. I mean, vintage is a social drink, definitely.
Yeah.
And all other sort of port wines, they will actually have a sort of a plastic top with a cork finish. We call it a tea top, and they've all been barrel aged, so they formed flavors in the presence of a limited amount of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
So when you open, a Bin 27, a late bottle vintage, an aged tawny, you have 6 weeks. You know,
6 weeks.
6 weeks. You know, don't leave the top off, but you know,
of course,
and
in the fridge,
and in the fridge, and don't put it in the cellar where you can't find it. You know, leave it in the kitchen, and you know, and just pour a glass and relax in the evening. It's with
anyone. So I think this is part of your job is, Katarina, is to I think education of the category in general helps the brands.
Absolutely.
And I think that if people realize that when they pop the cork, they have a month to drink it,
mm-hmm.
then it's not, there's going to be no sort of dissonance in opening it, because they realize that they have, you know, there's going to be four or five occasions afterwards to drink this.
And for $18 too.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's got the shelf life of a Twinkie, for Christ's sake.
And, whoa.
And, but the other thing is also people worry way too much about the glassware. You know, sort of, the snifter is definitely wrong. And New York is definitely
out.
Leading that move mm-hmm. to a proper port wine glass or even a white wine glass
mm-hmm.
For port wine. So just use a white wine glass at home. Pour yourself, 2 to 3 ounces and relax in the evening.
So a Dixie cup's worth. So it doesn't really matter the...
Well, you put it this way. If you have a line across your shoulders from swirling it, it's the wrong glass.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about this cocktail that we have.
Yeah, that I already drank.
The Pink Diamond, which I already drank as well. And it was, wisely instructed to us that this was a dangerous one. Super refreshing. On ice, we have Croft Pink Rosé Port.
Yeah, so this is something that was invented by David Gimmerines and Adrian Bridge for, the summer during the day, and it's called Croft Pink. It is a rosé port. It doesn't taste like your traditional port wine. It has very much more of the cherry fruit flavors coming through. This is something that is designed, it's sweet, designed to be diluted by ice, to be served chilled, and very much for the US, because you definitely lead the world in the cocktail culture, to be done as a cocktail. So you can do it very simply on the rocks, half pink, splash of soda for effervescence, lemon for acidity, and that's your Pink Diamond.
Okay.
You can do it 50-50 with jasmine tea. So pink jasmine.
Okay, it's a great idea. Yeah.
I've been in Austin, Texas, and I had a very nice cocktail with Hendrick's tonic, pink, lemon juice, peppercorn syrup, and a little bit of Galliano just to throw in there. Slap rosemary, and I've never had such a wonderful cocktail.
Hmm.
You know, so there are a lot of things.
Now, was
you
that
could
on a bar, or did you guys have an event that you were doing?
That was in a bar.
Cool.
At the W Hotel down there that just opened up, and the bar lady sort of looked at it, tasted it, and said, "Give me a second." And she came up with this first go.
Well, that sounds amazing. I mean, you probably would have. I'm doing co-brand's job here, but you would have probably paid a mixologist a fair penny to come up with that. And it sounds like a very interesting drink. I mean,
people like playing around with cocktails today.
Yeah.
Well, how much does that bottle go for?
Yeah. Retail.
That will retail at $17.99 to $18.99.
Aaron's getting into the chocolates.
Aaron's asking open-ended questions so she can
pound chocolate. We have four more wines to go through, folks, so we got to move.
Okay,
yeah.
let's start boogieing here. Mm-hmm. What else do we got?
So the next one we have is the Fonseca Bin 27, which we're going to have with chocolate. Some people have jumped the gun.
No lunch over here, no lunch.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Bin 27 is your Ruby Reserve. This is going to be black currants and blackberries, mm-hmm. very round and voluptuous on the palate. It goes well with chocolate because chocolate is sweet. So is the Fonseca Bin 27. It has a lot of acidity and tannins that help, you know, make the sort of the chocolate feel slightly lighter on the palate. And it lasts so long on the palate, it lasts with the length of the chocolate.
No, this is awesome pairing. So this is a Jacques Torres chocolate. Mm. Now, did you guys work specifically with him to infuse this, or is this just a chocolate you chosen to pair with it?
No. Yeah, he came to us and said, you know, he wanted to do this bonbon with port, and we decided that Bin 27 was perfect for this. You know, because it's widely around accessible, as we were talking about. So.
Awesome.
Yeah, you can buy them in the stores. He's always has them out and about.
Mm-hmm. That and the chocolate-covered Cheerios. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Amongst other things. I like the bark. But today, this is the move. Yeah. I totally agree with you. Accessible. Has a nice sort of lift to it in terms of acidity and good finish. Yeah.
And what people aren't really aware, especially in the trade, is that literally 4 years ago, that tasted completely different.
Mm.
We call them porteaux. The fruit extraction that we're getting means that it's hiding the alcohol, because to make port wine, you get your sugar, your grapes, you convert half the sugar into alcohol, you then fortify it with a neutral grape spirit. So you can improve the quality of spirit. That's happened. That's really moved, jumped ahead in quality for vintage port.
Mm-hmm.
But for, you know, our reserves and LBVs, the porteaux, by getting 40% more fruit extraction, it binds to the alcohol, and therefore the alcohol
You don't taste the alcohol. It's coming across as viscosity instead of hot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, but you can really tell the difference now, you know, who's using doing remontage to make their ports and who's using a porteaux. I believe in 10 years' time, everyone's going to use this system. Because, you know, customers want quality, and I believe the market will drive this change. So
Is there an inherent cost to doing it this way?
A little, but if you're breaking it down over the next 30 years, it's worthwhile.
It's marginal, because you're changing something for the better. There's a lot of history in port, and there's a lot of ways to do things that will never change. But it seems like this method is, if you can remove the heat. And keep the fruit, and then keep the alcohol kind of where it's, what's this, a little bit over 15?
It's 20%.
20%.
No, see.
They're all 20.
It's actually 20% alcohol.
Right. I would have said 18. I was going to let you lead me there, but 20, I did not know.
Yeah. I mean, a good port should be around 20%. If it's 18, something's gone wrong,
mm-hmm.
and they've had to reduce the alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely one way to sort of spot a sort of something's up.
Yeah.
But then the next port wine that we're having is rather interesting, because that's also a reserve.
It's really interesting. The nose is super expressive.
But the mid palate on this is so different. It's also got this sort of, you know, I don't even know how to say it. It's like this leafy, but also like, you know, more intense flavor. You can almost, it's vegetal meets fruit. You know what I mean?
And little anise. I get like...
Right.
Yeah. Wait. So we're talking about Fonseca Terra Bella, by the way.
Ah, okay.
Yes. Yeah, so that's the organic version of the Bin 27.
And you get a long lingering finish. I'm getting at least a 10 to 15 second finish off that.
For these organic vines, we do actually have to... We need more vines to produce this wine, because we use a slightly higher age average.
Mm-hmm. How many plants per bottle?
Well, normally it's about one. We're just over about sort of just under 2.5. Sorry, nice. One and a half. So this is definitely
50%
more concentrated.
50% more fruit to make the same amount of volume.
And what's the major difference here as well is that, you know, you can talk to the Benzingers and they're great. I love them to bits about all the organic viticulture they're doing. But, you know, I pull their leg that they make great table wine, organic table wine. They don't have to make organic spirit as well. And that's the tough part of organic port production, is you have to make an organic wine
right.
and an organic spirit
right.
to make a sure. organic port.
And you were saying something interesting before the show, that a lot of your workers live in Portugal near these vineyards, and a large reason that you're producing this port organically is for their own well-being. And
we don't, you know, all of our pickers live around us, so it's a real important point, especially if you're going to be there for the next 300 years. We have pickers who've been working for us for four generations. Mm-hmm. It's important we get all of these chemicals out of that water table. This is organic, but we are also sustainable. Mm-hmm. Follow sustainable viticultural practices in all of our vineyards, and we've even persuaded all of our farmers to follow this as well. The Terrabella makes that point that we are very conscientious about this. But I believe we have to be sustainable everywhere. That's very, very important.
And also the Douro is now just a bunch of lakes. It's not running. So all those toxins just, you know, come into the water and just
sit.
So it's five lakes. So
exactly.
Everybody, not just us, has to stop using the quantities of chemicals. Mm-hmm. And we have to lead the industry.
Mm-hmm. So are we ready for our next one, which is tawny? Yeah.
You can tell by the color that it's a tawny too. Much lighter, a little bit more amber in color.
Right. So this is the Taylor Fladgate 20-year-old tawny, which is the number one restaurant port in the U.S.
But this is also, to me, when I was doing lists or working in retail in the past, this was something that we had on the shelf at all times, because literally people believe that, whether it's right or wrong, that somehow 10 is not enough to be special, but somehow 20-year-old
magic number
is the magic number. Mm-hmm. and they see it, and then they see the price point, and they go, they somehow rationalize the age and the price point to be a purchasable item every time. And I think that you've done a great job in making this accessible, but also have a quality statement and a vintage where people, you know, it's like they don't realize that it's a potentially a blend, and you'll go, please explain that in a minute. But, you know, it's still, the youngest is 20, correct?
10.
Oh, no, 10.
10, that's right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the average is 20.
It goes up to 40.
Right. Well, you'd have to do that to make the 10 work, right?
Mm. Yes.
So the 20-year-old, what we have here is the rubies are all matured in a large wooden vat, 100,000 liters in size. Protect the fruit, protect the color. With the aged tawnies, we put in a 600-liter barrel. More surface area, you give it more oxygen. It's not the wood flavor, it's the oxygen. Mm-hmm. And it changes the berry fruit flavors to the nutty characteristics. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a 10-year-old will have some remnants of fruit in the form of dried figs, dried apricots. The 20s lost that, and now as you get the hazelnuts, walnuts,
it's all
caramel.
The tertiary characteristics.
Exactly, exactly. And so the trick of doing a great 10, 20, 30, 40 is aged tawny stock, backup stock. So even though we're not one of the largest port producers, we certainly are one of the largest when you look at how much stock do we have aging in our lodges in a porter. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, you can take an average plus or minus 2 or 3 years, because that allows your blender to go in the back, bring out whatever barrels he needs. His job is to make sure that 20-year-old tastes the same high quality every time we make it. And we'll bottle probably about 4 times a year. So it's important every year, every time we make it, it tastes exactly the same.
Sure.
Aaron, you're getting on the top notes, you get some of that almost sherry-like.
Yeah, for sure. But it was interesting you just mentioned that a lot of people kind of attribute the nutty characteristics to the oak, where you're saying
it's the oxidation.
Yeah, no, it's all of our barrels are secondhand. They're already aged, they're neutral. We've had all of the flavors stripped out of them. We use oak simply because there's more oak around in Europe from other wine regions. Mm-hmm. But because it's neutral wood, technically I can use any form of wood. Mm-hmm. I can use mahogany. I don't like mahogany because it expands and contracts more, and then you get more seepage. Mm-hmm. So it tends all to be oak.
And how have you fared selling your barrels in the secondary market to Scotch and bourbon producers? Seems like everyone nowadays has got a port aged whiskey.
We try to hold on to our barrels. We've never had any interest from any of the whiskey producers or bourbon producers. Probably because our barrels will probably be quite expensive. They've had such brilliant wine in them. A whiskey out of these is going to be awesome.
Well, that's quite a statement, but I like that statement.
So we're moving on to the final wine, which is a 2009 vintage port. How was the 2009 vintage, Robert?
2009 vintage was a warm...
epic.
A warm, epic, dry year. The trick with the 09 was, when did you pick? Mm-hmm. We picked 2 weeks before most of the industry, so we think we were able to produce a phenomenal wine. We've got blenders working for us for the last 50 years, and they've never seen anything this big before.
Look how purple it is.
It's also the darkest we've ever produced.
Oh, is
how would,
it?
Okay. How would you compare this to the 94 or the 2000?
Well, if you think one-fifth of that liquid I didn't make, which is the spirit alone has got much better. Mm-hmm. Considering this is a much bigger year than the 94 as well, I think this is going to be a better than 94. Just
stock up. That's what you're thinking right now.
Not much available.
Trying to help out our listeners.
So this is the Croft. So this is Croft 09, and Croft is also part of my house. It's it joined us in 2001. It's the oldest port wine house, founded in 1588. So, you know, it's got the caliber that we want. But this vineyard used to belong to Baron Fladgate in the late 1800s. We lost it when phylloxera destroyed all the vines in the vineyard. Well, we gave it away, we sold it. And then somebody comes along with American rootstock, back comes the wine trade, and we've been spending 100 years saying, can we have it back? So in 01 we did. Now we have it, and it's making these exceptional wines.
This is rich, yeah.
This is dense.
Yeah, it is.
I love the tropical notes in the Croft 2009. But some pineapple.
Are you detecting any alcohol?
No, yeah, not. It's present, but it's not burning at all. No.
It's there. I mean, it's clear that it's there, but it's not like it's right on the front.
But in the old days, you had that burn when you drank a vintage on release. Mm-hmm. I have not changed the way I make our ports. So what's happened is by getting better quality spirit, it marries with the wine within a year and a half. You don't have to wait 10 years for that marriage to take place. So it's absolutely fine to drink this young if you want a fruit bombshell.
Okay.
So I always say drink a vintage every 5 years, because it'll taste different every 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Get 6 bottles and pop one every year. Yeah. So, well, I don't want to forget before we end the show. I know we have a very limited time, and there is a property called the Yeatman, which I would love for you to give a little blast to.
Yeah. So anyone visiting Porto in the north of Portugal, I would definitely suggest you come and stay at the Yeatman Hotel. It has the largest Portuguese wine cellar, and that's sort of table wines and ports. It's a Michelin-starred restaurant, and it has a gorgeous Cordelis Vinotherapy Spa.
Oh, nice. Love Cordelis.
I can see you sort of having a beautiful meal, drinking some of the finest Portuguese wines.
Right on the water.
Early hours of the morning, overlooking the beautiful town of Oporto.
Yeah.
And then swanning down to the sort of the spa around 11 o'clock in the morning, you know, feeling like sort of 10 years younger when you finish, and then going straight into lunch and doing it again.
Excellent. And when was this opened?
This was opened in 2010.
Okay, so super recent.
Super recent. New.
And this is part of the Taylor Fladgate family?
It's part of the family, but we keep it as a separate business because this is something for the north of Portugal. So I have all of my competitors there, and it's very important that they feel part of it. All the rooms have been decorated by individual top wineries around the world. So, you know, we have Crash through in there. You know, we have some of the top producers of table wine.
Great.
It's like, you know, the museum in Loisium.
Oh, I've been there. Yeah, in Austria.
In Austria. And they have the different producers in that part of the world
Shared passion.
Dedicated rooms. But let me ask you, so if I come to visit, I'll get myself to Portugal, but you'll square
we'll
me
hook
away.
You up.
You'll square me away at the hotel.
I'll put you in the Taylor suite, and you get to sleep in a barrel.
Wait, is that off the kitchen?
There's a photo of it here. I was like, wow, yeah, that is insane.
Do I have to clean dishes?
Check this out.
Nice, nice.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. As we talked about before, there is a wealth of information that you can share. So it's a pleasure to have you here. And thank you, Katarina, for joining as well. And we'll just continue to look out for these different ports and try to do our best to use
drink
them
more port.
And drink them
drink
and
port.
Incorporate
drink
them
port.
Into more of a daily life. So
port goes really deliciously with chocolate chip cookies, by the way.
That's my other favorite.
You didn't bring any?
I didn't bring
On that note, we'll say a goodbye to our 101st episode, and thank you guys for coming in. It's been a great, great pleasure, and we're going to sit here and drink the rest of this port while we make way for the next show here at Roberta's.
Robert Bauer from Taylor Fladgate and Katarina Jack from Cobrand. We'll see you next week, 4 p.m., heritageradionetwork.com.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.